The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 20. Tabooed Persons. Section 1. Chiefs and Kings Tabooed. We have seen that the Mikado's food was cooked every day in new pots and served up in new dishes. Both pots and dishes were of common clay, in order that they might be broken or laid aside after they had been once used. They were generally broken, for it was believed that if anyone else ate his food out of these sacred dishes, his mouth and throat would become swollen and inflamed. The same ill effect was thought to be experienced by anyone who should wear the Mikado's clothes without his leave. He would have swellings and pains all over his body. In Fiji there is a special name, Kanalama, for the disease supposed to be caused by eating out of a chief's dishes or wearing his clothes. The throat and body swell, and the impious person dies. I had a fine mat given to me by a man who durst not use it because Thakombor's eldest son had sat upon it. There was always a family or clan of commoners who were exempt from this danger. I was talking about this once to Thakombor. Oh yes. Single quote said he. Here, so-and-so. Come and scratch my back. Single quote the man scratched. He was one of those who could do it with impunity. The name of the men thus highly privileged was Nandakani, or the dirt of the chief. In the evil effects thus supposed to follow upon the use of the vessels or clothes of the Mikado and a Fijian chief, we see that other side of the God-man's character to which attention has been already called. The divine person is a source of danger as well as of blessing. He must not only be guarded, he must also be guarded against. His sacred organism, so delicate that a touch may disorder it, is also, as it were, electrically charged with a powerful magical or spiritual force which may discharge itself with fatal effects on whatever comes in contact with it. Accordingly, the isolation of the man-god is quite as necessary for the safety of others as for his own. His magical virtue is in the strictest sense of the word contagious. His divinity is a fire, which, under proper restraints, confers endless blessings, but, if rashly touched or allowed to break bounds, burns and destroys what it touches. Hence the disastrous effects supposed to attend a breach of taboo. The offender has thrust his hand into the divine fire, which shrivels up and consumes him on the spot. The Nubus, for example, who inhabit the wooded and fertile range of Jebel Nubba in eastern Africa, believe that they would die if they entered the house of their priestly king. However, they can evade the penalty of their intrusion by baring the left shoulder and getting the king to lay his hand on it. And were any man to sit on a stone which the king has consecrated to his own use, the transgressor would die within the year. The Kazembes of Angola regard their king as so holy that no one can touch him without being killed by the magical power which pervades his sacred person. But since contact with him is sometimes unavoidable, they have devised a means whereby the sinner can escape with his life. Kneeling down before the king, he touches the back of the royal hand with the back of his own, then snaps his fingers. Afterwards he lays the palm of his hand on the palm of the king's hand, then snaps his fingers again. This ceremony is repeated 4 or 5 times, and averts the imminent danger of death. In Tonga it was believed that if anyone fed himself with his own hands after touching the sacred person of a superior chief or anything that belonged to him, he would swell up and die. The sanctity of the chief, like a virulent poison, infected the hands of his inferior, and, being communicated through them to the food, proved fatal to the eater. A commoner who had incurred this danger could disinfect himself by performing a certain ceremony, which consisted in touching the sole of a chief's foot with the palm and back of each of his hands, and afterwards rinsing his hands in water. If there was no water near, he rubbed his hands with the juicy stem of a plantain or banana. After that he was free to feed himself with his own hands without danger of being attacked by the malady which would otherwise follow from eating with tabooed or sanctified hands. But until the ceremony of expiation or disinfection had been performed, If he wished to eat, he had either to get someone to feed him, or else to go down on his knees and pick up the food from the ground with his mouth like a beast. He might not even use a toothpick himself, but might guide the hand of another person holding the toothpick. The Tongans were subject to induration of the liver and certain forms of scrofula, which they often attributed to a failure to perform the requisite expiation after having inadvertently touched a chief or his belongings. Hence they often went through the ceremony as a precaution, without knowing that they had done anything to call for it. The king of Tonga could not refuse to play his part in the rite by presenting his foot to such as desired to touch it, even when they applied to him at an inconvenient time. A fat and wieldy king, who perceived his subjects approaching with this intention, while he chanced to be taking his walks abroad, has been sometimes seen to waddle as fast as his legs could carry him out of their way, in order to escape the importunate and not wholly disinterested expression of their homage. If anyone fancied he might have already unwittingly eaten with tabooed hands, he sat down before the chief, and, taking the chief's foot, pressed it against his own stomach, that the food in his belly might not injure him, and that he might not swell up and die. Since scrofula is regarded by the Tongans as a result of eating with tabooed hands, we may conjecture that persons who suffered from it among them often resorted to the touch or pressure of the king's foot as a cure for their malady. The analogy of the custom with the old English practice of bringing scrofula's patients to the king to be healed by his touch is sufficiently obvious, and suggests, as I have already pointed out elsewhere, that among our own remote ancestors scrofula may have obtained its name of the king's evil, from a belief, like that of the Tongans, that it was caused as well as cured by contact with the divine majesty of kings. In New Zealand the dread of the sanctity of chiefs was at least as great as in Tonga. The ghostly power, derived from an ancestral spirit, diffused itself by contagion of everything they touched, and could strike dead all who rashly or unwittingly meddled with it. For instance, it once happened that a New Zealand chief of high rank and great sanctity had left the remains of his dinner by the wayside. A slave, a stout, hungry fellow, coming up after the chief had gone, saw the unfinished dinner, and ate it up without asking questions. Hardly had he finished when he was informed by a horror-stricken spectator that the food of which he had eaten was the chief's. I knew the unfortunate delinquent well. He was remarkable for courage, and had signalized himself in the wars of the tribe, but, no sooner did he hear the fatal news than he was seized by the most extraordinary convulsions and cramp in the stomach, which never ceased till he died, about sundown the same day. He was a strong man, in the prime of life, and if any Pukeha left square bracket European right square bracket freethinker should have said he was not killed by the tapu of the chief, which had been communicated to the food by contact, he would have been listened to with feelings of contempt for his ignorance and inability to understand plain and direct evidence. This is not a solitary case. A Maori woman having eaten of some fruit, and being afterwards told that the fruit had been taken from a tabooed place, exclaimed that the spirit of the chief, whose sanctity had been thus profaned, would kill her. This was in the afternoon, and next day by 12 o'clock she was dead. A Maori chief's tinderbox was once the means of killing several persons. For, having been lost by him, and found by some men who used it to light their pipes, they died of fright on learning to whom it had belonged. So, too, the garments of a high New Zealand chief will kill anyone else who wears them. A chief was observed by a missionary to throw down a precipice a blanket which he found too heavy to carry. Being asked by the missionary why he did not leave it on a tree for the use of a future traveller, the chief replied that it was the fear of its being taken by another which caused him to throw it where he did, for if it were worn, his tapa, that is, his spiritual power communicated by contact to the blanket and through the blanket to the man, would kill the person. For a similar reason a Maori chief would not blow a fire with his mouth. For his sacred breath would communicate its sanctity to the fire, which would pass it on to the pot on the fire, which would pass it on to the meat in the pot, which would pass it on to the man who ate the meat, which was in the pot, which stood on the fire, which was breathed on by the chief, so that the eater, infected by the chief's breath conveyed through these intermediaries, would surely die. Thus in the Polynesian race, to which the Maoris belong, superstition erected round the persons of sacred chiefs a real, though at the same time purely imaginary barrier, to transgress which actually entailed the death of the transgressor whenever he became aware of what he had done. This fatal power of the imagination working through superstitious terrors is by no means confined to one race. It appears to be common among savages. For example, among the Aborigines of Australia, a native will die after the infliction of even the most superficial wound, if only he believes that the weapon which inflicted the wound had been sung over and thus endowed with magical virtue. He simply lies down, refuses food, and pines away. Similarly, among some of the Indian tribes of Brazil, if the medicine man predicted the death of anyone who had offended him, the wretch took to his hammock instantly in such full expectation of dying, that he would neither eat nor drink, and the prediction was a sentence which faith effectually executed.